Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I am Dr. Vincent Medici on this glorious day. This is why we're all in California. And you're out there enjoying yourself, no doubt. Unless, of course, you have to sit home because you have that aching knee. The number one joint replaced each year across the United States. Your aching knee. The joint that kills the career of athletes for the last 200 years in American tradition. That aching knee. A terribly designed joint, as you're going to hear me argue today. And if you've got it, you understand what I'm talking about. And if you don't, listen, because what I'm going to say about the knee today, in a sense, applies to all the joints in the body. But in the next 60 minutes, what I want to teach you is really and give you is a perspective on that joint as to why, amongst all the joints in the body, that knee costs us so much trauma, so much pain each year, and what you can do about it. Now, this first became apparent to me years ago in college. I took a course in comparative anatomy, chordate morphogenesis, at a private university with a professor that lived for nothing but dissection. Wonderful course. Nobody knew the bear of a course it was going to be. Everybody thought back then it was organic chemistry that you had to worry about. I didn't think so. But I found this course in comparative anatomy to be the killer. Because the teacher lived for it. That old school kind of professor that's tenured, that does whatever he wants with the class, says whatever he wants, demands whatever he wants, and you can't do a thing about it. And my buddies and I spent a full 6 months dissecting every animal. And in this class, comparative anatomy, what you did is you took the joint of a frog, the joint of a cat, the joint of a pig, the joint of different forms, different types of animals, the same joint. So you put the knee of one next to the knee of the other, and you looked at each joint across six or seven types of animals. So it was evolutionary biology. It was a wonderful opportunity to see how a knee joint evolved, how a hip joint evolved. Who do you think gets more knee pain, gorillas or people? Did the Neanderthal man suffer from joint pain more than the Cro-Magnon? And this is evolutionary biology, and it spoke to us because it really taught us about the knee and about what a precarious little joint this knee actually is. It's got to hold up the entire 75% of your body. The top 75% is fulcrumed on the knee. And that creates the first problem, especially if you're overweight. And we'll get into all the different causes that nobody's telling you about because they don't want to understand it from a biomechanical perspective. So here's this joint. If you can attach to an evolutionary concept, not designed for that moment in evolution where man stood up. Right there, we lost it on that joint. It wasn't ready. If you compare the knee joint to the hip joint, if you compare the knee joint to the jaw, if you compare the knee joint to the ankle, and you study the formation of it, the stability of it, the angles on it, the ranges of motion around it, the knee is a puny, undernourished, misplaced. Take the hip, for instance. The hip is wide, and the knee is narrow. Just that angle from the width of the hip down the femur, streamlined to the knee. Very typical shape for people. Most of us are wider at the hips than we are at the knee. Now, that has certain advantages, but the knee, if it's too caved in, if the distance between the pelvis to the knee joint collapses a little bit too more, we call these people pear-shaped. But even if you're not pear-shaped, this is the type of concept that allows you to see that the knee isn't really designed to take the top 75% of the body. The joint, in a sense, should be much wider. If you look at your long-distance runners, you can see really the knee in the formation that we would have hoped all of us would have had. The long-distance runner is going to be very long in the femur, very long in the tibia. The leg bone has great length. The thigh bone is a little shorter. This ratio between the length of the thigh bone and the length of the leg determines one of the central lines of torque on the knee. Let's exaggerate this. If someone had a very, very long thigh, a very long femur, and a very short leg, I think common sense would tell you right off the bat that that's the person that's going to have way more compressive force on the knee. That knee off a very short leg and a very tall thigh, I think you can see, it's just common sense that that joint is going to take way more compressive force. It's going to be holding up a longer distance from the knee to the top of your head. Now, your long-distance runners, those that survive through training, are weeded out very largely on the basis of this biomechanical quirk. Secondarily, if the knee doesn't have enough musculature, what happens very often is the patella, that's the kneecap, the patella cannot stay stabilized as the knee moves. As you move your leg, the kneecap fits into a groove. It's called the patellar groove. And those of you that know the pain of the knee under the kneecap, this is a big diagnostic differential. Some of you understand knee pain under the kneecap. You sit in a movie house and your knee flares up and you can just about tell. It's not deep inside the knee. It's just underneath the kneecap. Years ago, we had a name for this, chondromalacia patella. Chondromalacia patella. Pain under the kneecap. They'd flip the kneecap up and scrape the cartilage underneath the kneecap. It was ludicrous. It was done regularly until about 10, 15 years ago. It was replaced by a better concept of one type of knee pain, pain under the kneecap. And that concept was that the patella, the kneecap, wasn't tracking. It wasn't moving in the right groove between the end of the thigh and the beginning of the tibia or the leg bone. Now, the patella tracking issue was an issue that had to do first with muscular strength around the muscles of the joint. That muscular strength around those muscles, primarily in a muscle on the inside of the knee called the vastus medialis. That's that muscle. If you put your hand on your knee and you just go to the inside of the knee and come up a little bit, it's that chunky muscle. You know that muscle that you build out when you do your lunges. And I don't recommend those lunges, and we'll get to that later. But that muscle there is called the vastus medialis. That muscle, more than any muscle of the lower leg there, controls the tracking of the patella. So one of the biomechanical vulnerabilities of the knee has to do with how the patella tracks. And how that tracks, how it stabilizes, has to do with muscularity of all four muscles around the knee. That's that big muscle on the inside, the vastus medialis. Then you've got that little muscle on the outside, the vastus lateralis. And then you've got two big muscles that start all the way up in the hip that come all the way down the top of the leg, the rectus femoris and the vastus intermedius. So that rectus femoris, that gives you that muscular crease halfway down your leg. And those two chunky little muscles, the medialis and the lateralis, those hug the kneecap. If those muscles don't have tone, very often the patella does not track. And that's mostly related to that muscle on the inside. So you can have athletes, people in the public sector, that suddenly get this pain underneath the kneecap, consider themselves fairly savvy in their exercise routines, with the exception of the fact that the muscles around the knee build disproportionately. The ratio of strength, and then the ratio of strength versus flexibility, begin to go disproportionate. A rounded joint, again, this is a central concept. A rounded joint are muscles. Those muscles connect into the joint. Those muscles will pull in balance on the joint, or those muscles, because of different levels of strength and different levels of flexibility, will begin to pull disproportionately. So if one pulls a lot harder than the other pulls, the angle of compression into the joint, the angle of torque into the joint, becomes faulty, and the joint will begin to inflame. That famous Olympic athlete, Edwin Moses, when he was 40 years old, his speed had barely slowed from when he competed at age 18. And Moses was an engineer, designed labs to study the biomechanics of the joint like nobody in the profession, and worked with a physicist named Gideon Ariel from Israel. And the two of them teamed up and built concepts around the biomechanics of a joint, relevant to you, because if you're thinking about a knee replacement, if you're thinking about a hip replacement, if you're thinking about a shoulder replacement, all of this revolves more than anything else around biomechanics. So Ariel and Moses proved that over 20 years of an athlete's life, the athlete didn't even have to age. His performance stayed stellar for a full 22 years in competition. And this was because he mastered this concept that the amount of pull on the joint is a function of the strength of the joint versus its flexibility. Now, I'm going to turn that into common sense for you in a moment. But as it relates to the knee, if you see those muscles around the lower leg atrophied, if going into the squat, and that squat done correctly, done like the power lifter does it, done so you don't hurt the knee, done like they try to teach you in Pilates, done like they try to teach you in calisthenics, done like they teach you in the martial arts, the squat correctly administered, the squat where the buttocks pushes out as the leg comes down. Have you ever done a squat? If you come down straight when you do a squat, you feel this enormous force into your feet. You feel this enormous force into your knee. When you do a squat, you've got to settle in and push out into the buttocks. And you'll feel the difference between the two. A squat, when it's done correctly, places no compressive force on the knee whatsoever. You see this play itself out in powerlifting all the time in athletic competition. The point is that if you go into a squat correctly, and you find the thigh, the muscles of the thigh, the muscles around the lower leg, if you find that they're challenged, if you find that you can't do 10 squats easily, and you're a physical, ambulatory, moving individual, and yet your muscles of the leg cannot sustain, okay, what it would take to do 10, 15 squats without having your legs tremble, you're basically proving to yourself that the musculature around the knee is not sufficient to stabilize the kneecap. So half of knee pain each year is under the knee. One place you look is to stability brought by enough musculature of those muscles that you feel when you do that squat. Compression of the knee, one place you have to look is weight. First line of defense against pain in the knee is to drop weight. If you need to get off the 10 to 20 to 30 pounds, if the knee pains come on out of nowhere and you notice that knee pain...